Though business unusual, our correspondent Colin Cullis in studio to infinity and beyond. Beyond meat.
Beyond meat. This is
in this particular case.
Yeah, they created a bit of a splash. They've been around for a decade, but they created a bit of a splash with their IPO listing a couple of weeks ago. Launched at sort of $25, rose rapidly up to sort of $70. They're currently at sort of $87. They went from an initial IPO of $3.8 billion. They're currently sitting on $5.2 billion. But it's the story about how they got there that I think is quite interesting, because when somebody with a good cause and a great story can turn it into an actual product that's making money, well, I'm going to have to modify that. They're not making money, but getting towards making money, then potentially onto a winner. And this thing relates to climate change.
Is it? Okay, so is this a climate change story? Is it a health story? Is it an alternative story? Is it a bunny hugger story? Sorry, people who care about animals. What is the story of Beyond Meat?
I'm going to tick all of the above. And it's Beyond Meat is the one company, and they're sort of equivalent and very similar startup. So they kind of work side by side, is Impossible Foods. And the surprising thing is it's two men named Brown. Both of the founders, his names are Brown. So the first one, Impossible Foods, this is a biochemistry professor who took a bit of a sabbatical and wanted to do something to sort of do something meaningful with his life and challenge something that was kind of significant. And he said, listen, the meat industry, it's not sustainable. It's massive and it's really hard on the environment. And there's just so many of us that we just can't keep giving the meat in the volumes we're demanding to people who are using it. So he figured, can I get something else? And the key thing he found, and it'll be a word that you can drop in conversations and use with all sorts of stuff, heme.
Heme
is the word we love. Why? It's the thing that gives meat the flavor that tastes like meat. We never knew.
Sorry. Heme is the thing that gives the fake meat or the new...
All meat.
All meat. So when you have a steak, it has got heme in it.
Yes. And you probably heard it, hemoglobin.
Yes, so, blood.
Yeah, so it's the active thing in the blood made with an iron sort of based chemical, mm-hmm. blah, 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 that allows the oxygen to be traveled around the body. But when we have that in meat, we can taste that and we find, that's the meat taste.
Because if you've ever had a soya mince product, and there've been many attempts over many years in South Africa, Knorr has tried it, I don't know if they still do it, and other producers have made soya minces, for example. Yeah.
Exactly, and it's because in part... it doesn't have enough heme, because plants have heme in them. Ultimately, it's part that they use for respiration and stuff as well. But meat has it in abundance. And us as somewhat carnivores really identify that flavor. So that was one of the key things. So he sets up his company. He starts looking at some of those things. 10 years later, they're now a bit of a thing. In fact, I'll touch on some of the stuff that they're doing. But likewise, Ethan Brown, and this is the one from Beyond Meat. He was an energy guy, MBA, also looking to do something. He has fond memories of the farm and doesn't really like the way people are treating animals and the amount that we need for making this food. So he, too, starts looking at how he can improve it using a lot more science. So there's a big, big chunk of science here, a good helping of marketing. And I think its idea... it's the time has come. Veggie burgers were created in the 80s, and exactly then they were
and
just...
And beans and pulses, and you break your teeth, because...
And I think the point you make is, why try and make something taste like meat? If you don't want to eat meat, don't eat meat. Eat some plant thing, make it look like a plant thing, and there you're done. The catch is, we do like that taste and flavor and mouthfeel.
And if we can... Yeah, but that's the point. It's a textural thing. It's a flavor thing. It's a satisfaction thing. And if you are a carnivore and you're being asked to replace it, you're not going to replace it with a can of chickpeas.
No. And what they've done, and there are many competitors, and others are promising that they will have something similar and better. The one that I haven't touched on yet this evening is people actually using actual meat fibers and just growing them in a dish. It's really expensive. Possibly at some point they might get and say, ha, we found the key ingredient. We can now, you know, build muscle in a big barn and there's no animals. It's just actual meat. But we're not there yet. So this looks like a really good second contender. And the thing with the heme, one, they isolated it. And the catch is you'd have to grow a lot of plants and then isolate that heme. But like many other things we do, we give it to a lovely little yeast, and we say, Mr. Yeast, this is the chemical component. We have modified you so that you start producing this thing as just part of your natural cycle.
Do you remember the hype that was around probably about 7 or 8 years ago about syn fuels and how we were going to create fuel out of mealies? And suddenly maize prices went mad. And suddenly, maize is a staple crop for human and animal consumption in South Africa. And suddenly it caused a spike in inflation because there was this anticipation that we were going to harvest all of the maize and turn it into ethanol. Ethanol would be a fuel replacement. We could become more fuel independent. But the trouble is we don't have enough land to do the fuel production and and the food production, and that kind of fell by the wayside, I suspect, because it's not particularly efficient. Is there not risk here that we start planting so many plants in order to create the meat that we actually lose sight of the plants that we need for a balanced diet at some point in the future?
Now, that is the nub of it, Bruce. So let me go back to how we got here in the first place. So after energy, which is like a good 70% of the carbon dioxide sort of contributors, is agriculture at 11%. And a big chunk of agriculture is the meat industry, because that's where most of the CO2 comes from. It comes from animals. But part of the greenhouse gas mix is which greenhouse gases are being emitted. CO2 is by far the principal one. But the secondary one, 16% of the greenhouse gases are methane. And methane is an even more powerful greenhouse gas. It's capable of trapping heat even better than CO2 is. And that almost exclusively comes from animals and cows in particular.
Yep.
So,
pop. Yes.
Now, you need to feed. Most of the plant food we grow isn't for fuel, and it's not for us. It's for those animals. So the notion is, when you stop needing the animals for the meat, you no longer need the space to grow the plants to feed the animals. You can use the plants just for making the food. And when you've got, and this is the composition, they use soy and potato protein. Potato protein gives us close to the texture, they say. They add a bit of beetroot juice to give us a little bit of red color, because we're really kidding ourselves there. And coconut oil replaces the fat. It actually stays as a solid at room temperature, and then turns into this lovely, oozy, drippy stuff that when you boil and grill these things, they drip like burgers do. And they get that lovely smell, if you happen to like a bit of coconut. And then this heme thing brings it all together, and we've got our burgers. So that's the kind of special mix that they've gone for. And they claim, this is their claims, only need 5% of the land to create an equivalent burger. So a beef burger versus one of theirs, 5% of the land. 74% less water and 87% less carbon emissions. So on that basis, yeah.
It's a win.
Yes, and now that it's, you know, hard-nosed capitalists have said, I'm giving some venture capital for this thing. Bill Gates is some of them. Leonardo DiCaprio. Some high-profile people have said, yeah, I'll put a couple of coins in this too.
Gram for gram, what does it cost to produce the lookalike burger versus the Moo burger?
Right now, about double. The stuff that they're using for Whoppers, the Burger King version, they're saying it's about $1 extra. And a McDonald's one, I couldn't find the actual price differential that they have, but they're probably absorbing it for now and using it as a bit of a marketing thing and showing that they're, you know, wanting to contribute.
But like all things, these things tend to become cheaper over time as we can become better at it. And maybe we produce the hybrid crops to create the volumes, you know, and that creates another issue of how we produce GMOs and that sort of stuff. Because the world needs to be intensively farmed in order to feed us all. But if we can create the look-alike, feed-alike, taste-alike, texture-alike meat products, we change the dynamics of the world quite substantially.
Yeah, and the big thing is, if you go and just Google plant-based meat taste, like as a YouTube video, there's a bunch of people, because they're pretty much available in most US supermarkets, and I say a lot of these fast food chains are starting to give you the alternatives. And they're just having people say, well, I tasted it, and gosh, it's not like the old veggie burgers, and I could easily take this. I'd happily eat this. And when you add in, there's no cholesterol, so win, and you're doing something good for the planet, well, then eating your McDonald's burger doesn't feel quite so bad. There is a little problem that they still have to address, and that's with flavor is enhanced by salt. And a regular beef burger has got a lot less salt in it than these do. They have started reducing it, but they haven't reduced it to the same level yet. So there's something they still got to work on. And there's that small matter, if you are looking at the business element of it, they're not profitable. But again, that's one of the things, when you add scale and you start growing out those markets, you can start looking to claw back some of those things. But I've got a second part to the story that hopefully makes it a little better. Because one of the challenges we have with our daily bread, as it were, is that wheat is a grass that's planted, and every season we're going to rip it all out again and then plant it again. Now, the catch with having to replant fields means lots of fuel, lots of big tractors, huge amounts of area that we have under cultivation with a lot of effort to do that. They're busy developing a form of grass. Right now it's got a very poor yield, but it stays in the ground. You just kind of mow this stuff every season and get the wheat off of it. It's got much deeper roots, which means it needs less water. It means you can use less fertilizer, because of course it can trap all of that stuff and get rid of all of the runoff. And because it's got deeper root systems than everything else, it can handle a bit of a rough downpour, which, you know, I think the Free State farmers sometimes worry about big downpours early on when the plants are still small. And likewise, you know, a prolonged heat wave, the roots and everything will sit there, the plant will look pretty miserable. But when the rains come, they'll come back to life again, as opposed to, well, thank you, right off that crop, let's hope it all gets better next year. So when we take those kinds of innovations, and then the final one, because these are, you know, potatoes and peas and soy and things like that, vertical farming. could become another option. So we've got all our land back now because we're not having to look after cows, but we can start farming these things effectively in big warehouses. Warehouses that can be located much closer to the cities where most of the consumption is happening, so we're cutting down on the transport. Because it's in a warehouse, we can control the temperature and the light. Light and temperature and everything else modeled from renewable energies because we've got solar panels or wind things somewhere on the roof. And inside, rather than, you know, farming has been a pretty backbreaking, laborious thing for most people, are robots cruising around pretty much that we've already got in Amazon buildings because they're just moving pallets of books and things everywhere else. Now they're looking after pallets of plants. So effectively what we put in the front, a couple of seeds, and what comes out the other end are perfectly ready to be crafted into plant burgers and lovely vegetarian dishes, complements of the kind of innovations that are coming from a little bit of a disruption to the regular businesses and a couple of smart people really thinking about how we're going to dodge the bullet on climate change.
Colin Cullis with Business Unusual.